One day I'm going to make a slasher movie with Sean Bean in it.
And he'll be the only survivor?
He'll be the only survivor.
No, we make a movie, we make a horror movie with Sean Bean, Idris Elba, and Jeffrey Dean Morgan. And then we're like, who fucking knows?
Who knows?
That'd be pretty funny.
Oh, and a blonde girl.
Yeah.
Like, just to be one. Like. So Willa Ford gets a job again.
Yes.
It's like, okay, just who checking. Knows? Who knows?
Hello, and welcome to I Thought They Smelled Bad on the Outside, a show that will come to your wedding and bribe the DJ to play Reigns of Castamere.
You die in a fire now.
No, it's gonna happen.
If it happens at our wedding, you'll be a dead groom, and you're gonna be on an episode of CSI. Oh. And then everyone's gonna find out that it was because you played the Castamere, whatever the bullshit it's called, and I'm gonna sit there and go, see, he asked for it.
And you just... And then, you know, Horatio's gonna look at you, and you just happen to have a crossbow ready for the occasion? Yes.
We have all of them. I'd be perfectly prepared, honey.
My name is Scott.
Nobody cares what your name is. You're the guy that's always on the show. I'm Sam.
And I'm Chrissy.
And Scott's going to murder me in 5 minutes.
Yes.
And this is a show about something. Right, Scott? I don't talk at the mic. I talk at you.
You talk at the microphone, Sam.
Talking at the microphone's lame. You know what's funnier? Staring at you and then laughing. I'm sorry. I will speak to the microphone now. And Scott will be drunk in 5 minutes. I'm sorry, listeners.
I'm just cutting you out of the whole episode now.
Okay.
You just watch. It'll be Chrissy and me talking, and then people will be like, man, it seems like there's part of this conversation that's not here.
Eh. I don't really care if you do that. I'm not going to be disappointed. Listeners will, because, you know, they like my beautiful voice and my sassy sense of humor. But, you know, we can't all win here. It's okay. I get it. I ruined things.
You ruined life, Sam. Also Christmas.
Also, guess what? You can sleep on the couch.
Fine. I have my choice. So many couches. Almost as many couches as dining room tables. We own too many tables in this house.
We do own too many tables in this house. So, what are we talking about? We're talking about Pick of the Week, right?
Yes.
Look, I segued.
So who are you throwing it to?
You! Because you never start.
Yeah, that's because I segue. It's my move.
Guess what? You fail.
Fine.
You first.
Fine. So my Pick of the Week is going to shameless self-promotion, because you should totally check out Backseat Book Club. A show I've been doing for a while and haven't been mentioning much. But it's a cool show where we talk about books.
I think he just hates it a lot more, so that's why he doesn't mention it too often.
See, I don't hate it as much because I don't have to do nearly as much cat herding.
You sure about that?
I'm pretty sure.
Just checking.
All right, Chrissy has to go now.
All right, so my pick of the week is the Twitter account Red Wedding Tears that's been retweeting people's reactions to Reigns of Castamere, and it's just, I just love it. I'm sorry.
Isn't it fantastic and made of lols?
It gives me so many feels, like the good kind of I'm going to laugh really hard feels, and I definitely recommend it.
And just a little bit of loss of faith in humanity. Just a little.
There's a book, people, that's been out for a really long time.
6 years, guys.
You
6 years.
Read it by now, and then already knew this, and then went, oh, or so even, that happened.
Or even just Wikipedia'd it.
Like, this has been, like, you go to talk about the books, you can't, I'm with you on this, you cannot spoil things based on old books.
It's true, you can't.
Guess what? Daisy is just as shallow and useless as all the old money people that Gatsby's been conning. That is the tragedy of the novel.
That is an interesting perspective that sometimes I forget to mention when I'm teaching. I just usually tell people that Daisy's a bitch.
See, no, that's the best part of Gatsby to me, is that Daisy is
a horrific person.
Is a terrible person.
She's probably the worst person in the whole story.
Yeah, probably.
And she hits somebody with her car. Hit and run, bitch. Just saying. Don't like her. Also, guess what? Gandalf dies and then is reborn again. There's a book spoiler for ya.
Oh, God.
How about Snape kills Dumbledore? We haven't mentioned that one in a while.
And Sam's just playing for time because she doesn't have a pick yet, does she?
Actually, I do. My pick of the week is Fangirl by Rainbow Roll, and the book is not out yet. It's coming out in September. I got an advanced reader's copy because I'm a big whore for Rainbow Roll, and the book is about a girl in college who has a twin sister, and the twin sister's like, I am so not into this fandom nonsense anymore, and the main character's like, I love fandom! All the boys are gay for each other! It reminds me of my college years.
But it's so true. All the boys are gay for each other,
Sam. I mean, we have things like Wincest still.
So, speaking of boys being gay for each other, the Anime North this year did not do a good job of establishing that one room is the Yaoi room all weekend. So people went to the Sherlock and Doctor Who panels in that one room and were horribly traumatized. And I'm like, I bitch about the amount of gay sex, dating, and ponies there are at Anime North every year. That this just maybe got the word out a little farther.
That's kind of amusing.
I also bitch about the amount of BBC television at Anime North.
Well, it's Anime North. Like, anime.
I expected it.
And also, come on. Do you need an hour to discuss the Sherlock-Watson pairing? It's the oldest thing in fan fiction. Literally.
Mm-hmm.
Literally.
Actually, yeah.
Fan fiction was invented for Sherlock Watson.
It was. And if you can get to the Toronto Reference Library, and you can actually go to the Sherlock Holmes room, and you can read all the old monographs written by fans with the Sherlock Watson fanfic in it.
It's kind of awesome. I kind of want to go read that now, just out of curiosity.
It's made of wood. They also have a really great picture book where Sherlock Holmes and Watson are dogs.
This later became a Ghibli TV series. Or a proto-Ghibli series, because I think it was a lot of people who went to make Ghibli. I knew Miyazaki did Sherlock Hound, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
And, oh my god, I loved Sherlock Hound.
Sherlock Hound was cool. But we are talking about...
Not Sherlock Hound.
Not
it
Sherlock...
should be.
You know, there's definitely a proto-Ghibli episode in us somewhere. I will...
Did we not even have our real Ghibli episode yet? No!
No, because it's... Because I'm trying to figure out how to break it up.
We'll talk about that.
Yeah, that's something we can discuss for a later time. But we are talking about The Walking Dead, not the comic, which is okay most of the time.
And not the TV show,
which is
questionable.
Which is seldom very good. Maybe two good episodes a year. Three?
Nah. First season was solid, except for the whole CDC thing. Second season, meh. It was okay. Maybe more than two good episodes.
So, in other words, Telltale should just write The Walking Dead?
Actually, yeah. That would be good.
See, but here's the thing. If they do it, it won't be a game anymore, and then it won't be as cool.
I know. So how about that game that won so many Game of the Year awards that it kind of messed with all the AAA developers who were sitting there and going, really? I didn't win?
Well, come on. Last year was not exactly a great field.
I don't disagree with that.
And I think they showed up and were like, hey, this is cool. We're going to take everything we learned from adventure games and everything we learned from indie story-focused stuff. And
all the stuff we did prior in some of our other games that we want to work on.
And we're going to put it all together and we're going to make it really cool as long as you don't play it twice.
That's less cool.
Because if you play it twice, or if your save file borks and then you have to pick up again with the randomized... choice decision thing, you'll realize how little narrative impact your actions have.
So that's kind of an interesting point, come to think of it.
Like, this is my big issue is, you know, the year had a lot of issues with Wizards' choices. Not Wizards' choices. Wizards' choices are about which school you specialize in, which you should always take conjuration, by the way. I'm talking about the magician's choice, which is where the magician gives you a choice, and then whatever you do, he kind of goes with the one he wants to be the most showy.
Yeah, see, you had the unfortunate experience of your save file working on the 360 version, which I did not have at all.
Twice.
And
I really don't like episode 3. Yeah, not because I had to play it twice, but because...
It worked enough times.
Well, because I had to play it twice, and then I had to sit there and be like, episode 3, you're really weird.
Was that the one where Larry gets it?
No, that's
the second one.
That's the second one.
The third one is the...
Well, we'll get to it, but I don't like episode 3.
I love episode 3. Oh, boy, you and I.
We'll fight it out.
Well, I have my reasons for why I like episode 3 and then why I get mad at it at the same time. In any case...
So, Telltale Games, Walking Dead, episodic series, like they always do. I'm curious to see if they'll ever actually have a game that's complete when you get it.
They had one, but it wasn't episodic. Remember Jurassic Park, that weird movie game that they made? That everyone was like, this is Jurassic Park or
no, that was still episodic.
No, it was not. It was not. You could buy it on a disc on release. And it was not episodic. It was just one big game, and it was like, it's a movie with choices. See, you weren't paying attention. Well, that's the only Telltale game I didn't put any money into.
Well, apparently that was the one that sucked anyhow, so yeah. Moving on. But you play a you play a convict, a convicted felon, and a history professor who, you know, on his way to federal prison, zombie apocalypse happens, and he finds himself taking care of a little girl.
And who is the best freaking character in video games next to Nanako from Persona 4.
It's very hard for me to disagree with that.
Which, if you've played Persona 4, you know how freaking amazing Nanako is. Clementine? Also pretty freaking awesome. And I basically based all my decisions on this game on Clementine, because that's how the game made me feel. It was, I have to protect the child. Well, even though she's a very self-sufficient child, amazingly enough.
But...
Her parents go missing.
Yeah, and it's just about interacting with people and sometimes interacting with zombies, mostly in the form of mashing Q until they leave you alone.
I'm okay with that.
That, which is okay.
It's the tension aspect that it oddly gives.
It's good at tension. But I guess overall, one thing I'll say right now is I really like the interface in this. Like, it plays around with how you view things. In an interesting way, where a lot of point-and-click games will give you a fixed camera. Like, there's still a lot of the scum engine in adventure games, even now, where they'll give you a fixed camera, and you just have a field of things you can interact with. And here, it keeps moving the camera, it keeps moving, really, your cursor and showing how you interact with things in a very contextual way. And it does a good job of putting you off balance, even... in those tense situations. Like, the first puzzle you have is loading a shotgun.
Yeah, it's pretty freaky, actually.
And it's really freaky because you're still trying to get a feel for, okay, over here, over there.
Yeah, you have to kind of play with the controls a little bit because it's giving you that sense of, oh my god, if I don't load this shotgun now, I'm going to get edited. Which totally happened to me the first time I played it.
You died on the first puzzle?
Yep.
Congratulations.
I know.
You have proved the justice of our culture.
You know me, I always have to feel things out, and I have a tendency sometimes that when I freak out, bad things just happen, and I'm okay with it. I will agree with you on that. I think that they finally learned from Back to the Future how to make a character move in a contextual way so that you're not just saying, pick item up, take item over here. It's a little bit more than that.
Get ye flask.
It's a little bit more than that. And I think Telltale's finally growing as a company.
How many A's are in the game company's name, Sam?
Telltale.
Okay. Just one.
I'm sorry. Words hard today.
You've been saying that every day. You hit like 5 o'clock and then words hard, I give up. Nap time.
It's like, wait, is today a day that ends in Y? Yeah, yes. Words are hard today.
But yeah, Telltale, I think, is doing a really good job of establishing themselves as being, you know, the primary go-to now for point-and-click adventure games, and I think Walking Dead sets them apart even more, just with the level of tension that it provides.
And I'm kind of curious as to how Eastern Europe is receiving Telltale's work, because point-and-click adventure games didn't really go away in Germany, the way they did everywhere else.
Well, especially considering there's a lot of companies now that, in Germany in particular, that are releasing a lot of different kinds of point-and-click adventure games now. And I wonder, because they have such a very different formula compared to, I guess, what Telltale's doing.
But Chrissy, you haven't said anything.
Yes.
Say something.
Well, I was just thinking about how I really like what Telltale did with the story and how they took something that a lot of people are familiar with, The Walking Dead.
Well, even story. Just the zombie-pocalypse.
Yeah, the zombie-pocalypse. And they made something new out of it. And they changed it. Well, that's one thing I love about Walking Dead TV comic game is that they take the zombie apocalypse and they turn it into something else. That it's not just about the zombies.
It's a human story.
It's a human story. And it's about how the choices that people make always come back to get them. Might not be now. It might be a couple of episodes later.
Yeah.
But your decisions, they matter. And what Telltale does is some of the really key decisions, they give you a timer. So you don't...
Oh, no. Everything's on a timer, really.
No, not all the responses.
Not all of them. There's a couple where you actually get a few minutes to really think long and hard what you get to do.
But most of the important moments, the moments that matter for gameplay, there's a timer, and you have to decide what you're going to do.
Well, the first nasty decision in episode one, you have to choose between Doug and Carly. You know, Doug's getting pulled out of a window by a bunch of zombies, and there's Carly's leg being grabbed by a zombie. She's trying to reach for her purse to get a gun. And I know we all probably went, Doug, you're lame. Go Team Carly. But it doesn't matter, because you still feel bad about leaving Doug behind. He's just this really geeky guy who's really nice to people, and Carly's a reporter who knows how to handle a gun. So when you look at those kind of situations, there's a part of you that's always weighing, you know, who would actually be more handy to have. And at least that's how I felt that first decision was meant to be played out. And, I mean, I was still heartbroken watching Doug, you know, go through the window. Because you're watching his legs and just his blood-curdling scream as he's going through it.
By the way, we are spoiling the hell out of this game. Yes. So if you were kind of interested and still haven't picked it up...
Don't listen to this right now.
It's really good. Go play it and then come back.
I mean, there's a lot of really interesting moments in the first episode that really establish just kind of how scary Lee Everett's situation is. When he goes back to his hometown to go to the pharmacy where his parents once ran, you know, he starts to see parts of his life come back. And one of the worst aspects of it is when he has to see his brother who is now among the walking, and he's under...
We're still in episode one, so we can use the word zombie.
Okay. He still is zombie.
That's the weird thing. Episode one of the game actually uses the word zombie. And yep. Then never again.
Well, okay. This mobby brother. He's under, you know, a bunch of 2x4s. And you just see him kind of clawing at the ground. And there's Lee trying to get the key to see if he can't get some medical supplies for this asshole named Larry, who I think a lot of us didn't feel a lot of sympathy when we killed him off. But, you know, Lee's trying to reform himself in a lot of cases. One, because he's got Clementine and he's trying to show her that he's not exactly a bad person. Even though you can play Lee as though he admits all those faults entirely, if you want to.
No, actually, there's a few cases
where you can't.
You will pick the option that says, I killed a guy, and he'll stop. He'll hold back. And I think that's interesting. Like, Lee is still a character, even though he's a sort of typical fill-in-your-own protagonist format to how he interacts with people. He's still a character. Like, when he says something, it's not... He's still the same person, no matter what dialogue option you pick.
But the responses are multifaceted, which is kind of interesting.
Whereas, say, someone like Commander Shepard is a different person if you pick Paragon or Renegade.
Yeah, that I totally see where you're coming from. But I do appreciate the fact that Lee's probably the most human character in the story. So it's kind of awesome that you as the player are going through the story as him, only because you actually get to uncover why he was going to jail and why his life got flipped, turned upside down.
Twice.
And why...
Three times, I guess.
And why he feels this insane desire to protect this little girl who... Like I said, she's self-sufficient, but she's lacking a parental figure, and it's the one thing that she wants and craves more than anything.
But, so, Now, there's a lot of good stuff in episode one, and they kept that going forward, but episode one also has some really adventure gamey sections. Like, there's this whole thing where you have to fix a radio to get the plot. Yeah. Like, the plot won't move forward until you fix this radio, so you have to go around the pharmacy hunting batteries and, like, fiddling with all the knobs, and I'm like, wow, this is some soup cans right here.
Well, hey, don't forget about the candy bars. Well, everybody will remember if you don't give them a candy bar.
I forgot. Like, honestly, I picked them up because it's an adventure game, and if you can pick it up, you pick it up. And then I did not give them to anyone, and you know what? No one called me on it.
I gave all mine to Clem and Duck.
But even things like, you know, you go to a motel parking lot, and it's full of zombies, and there's a little puzzle as, you know, you creep around, and you pop out, and then you hit one, and then you shove a car into another one, and, like, there's a whole little sequence that you have to do right, or you get eaten. And that's a little felt very old school Sierra, and that never comes back.
It's kind of sad.
No, I was actually okay with it not coming back because it was mostly frustrating and boring. Like, it was trial and error more than anything.
Well, and there was a lot of different ways that you could have done it, but the game wasn't wired that way. You had to do it the way the developers intended. You couldn't go off and try your own things and be creative.
Especially, it's like, you know, I've got three people with me. They aren't helping. Right.
Well, What's-His-Face was particularly not useful at all.
And even, like...
I don't even remember his name. I feel so bad.
Who?
What's his name from the actual TV show?
Glenn. Don't talk about Glenn like that!
Glenn is the only competent, sane individual in the comics.
Seriously,
which
Sam?
Which is kind of funny, because in the show you get him once, and he shows how kind of useless he is.
I'm going to smack you.
I know. I only say because I've only played the game.
Well, Glenn is just there to be like... Hey, I'm Glenn. I'm the really popular character. I'm gonna go do something else now.
Yeah.
Keep playing this game, though.
Remember, I'm going to Atlanta. See you later.
Going to Atlanta.
I'm sorry, but Carly was more useful than he was in the first episode, and that's because Carly had a gun.
Well, yeah.
I remember how they had to shoot that poor girl.
Well, going to get the keys off your zombie brother was like, okay, first you gotta figure out how to open the gate. And then you throw the brick, and then you turn the TVs on, and then you run, and it's like...
Okay, that puzzle was actually annoying.
Like, it's not Sam and Max fake mustache, and so you can impersonate a guy without a mustache, and you have infinite candies until you do it puzzle, but...
That one was frustrating, I've got to admit, because it was a specific like, order for the whole thing.
But it's still, like, this is still them trying to outgrow Monkey Island, in a way.
Sounds about right.
And Larry is terrible.
Well, let's put it this way. All the characters you meet in the pharmacy, most of them are pretty bad, actually. I mean, you have Larry, who's just like, I know what you did, and therefore I'm going to, like, ruin your life. And by the way, if that little girl gets hurt, you're dead. Which, that comment, I don't blame Larry for saying. When he involves his daughter, who is equally much a doucheface. You know what? I have a problem with that. Because Lily's kind of a horrible person, and she's kind of a Nazi. And they don't really make her a sympathetic character.
Well, it's weird.
Depending on how, I mean, that's how I played
it. Like, there are points where they want you to think she is, but it's like, no, it's not there.
I just know with the decisions that I made throughout all the episodes with Lily, she rubbed me the wrong way enough.
Even if you go the other way, she's not any nicer.
That's what I figured, but I just know that because of how she treated me to begin with. It was like, screw you. You know what?
No. Now I'm just you are nice a terrible person. Kenny might be crazy and dumb, but Kenny is crazy and dumb in a way that isn't mean to me.
Not just
so
that.
I'm teaming up with Kenny and his mullet.
You know what, though?
We're going to find that boat.
I love Kenny because Kenny has idealism, and it's something that, yes, in the zombie apocalypse is probably impossible to have, but damn it, did he have a lot of it. He wanted something positive. You can't blame him for sitting there being like, we gotta find that boat. You can't blame him.
He had a plan. He had a goal. What did Lily have? Boatload of crazy.
Well, boatload of crazy and her dad.
And daddy issues.
Her daddy cray cray.
Chrissy.
Big daddy issues.
Oh my god.
Well, do we want to talk more about episode one or move on?
Well, let's
round out episode one and then we'll move into two.
Okay. Well, they also, I guess in towards the end of the episode, when you're clearing out the motel, you end up finding a woman who is bit. And you have to decide, like, she wants to shoot herself and end it. And you have to decide, are you going to, are you going to give this woman a gun to end her life?
Yep.
Or are you going to put her down so that she doesn't become a zombie? And it's, again, it's one of those decisions that, in the end, if you've played it multiple times, you know it doesn't change the game. But I think it's a big decision, because it's also, just kind of comparing it to the TV series and the comics, it's like a point of no return for your character, because you're basically either giving up hope and saying, well, this is it, it's zombies, or you're going to be like, no, you know what, there's a chance that we can get through this, and life, every life is still valuable, even if they're complete douches like Larry.
Yeah.
And do we honor that, or do we give in to what's going on?
And it's interesting, because you can play Lee throughout the entirety of all five episodes like he's an angel of mercy if you really want to, because he gets put in that role far too many times that he's almost desensitized to it. But that first decision, that's the first one where you kind of see his emotion just pouring out, as if to say, like, on one hand, if I do this, you know, I'm going to feel like more of a murderer, and it might not change anything. And then there's that other decision of, you know, if I give it to her, at least then she's ending her own life. My hands are clean, except for the part where they're not actually.
They aren't. And even then, it's like when you give her the gun, you tell everyone else to go, and it's like, well, aren't you coming with us? Someone's got to stay to pick up the gun.
Yeah.
Like, he still has to stand and watch.
Yeah. And that's not the first time.
Or
the last.
But in episode two,
you meet some farmers.
You know,
gasoline.
Okay, so these farmers have an electric fence that zaps zombies. They run it on gas generators. This doesn't make a heck of a lot of sense. Because that's a lot of power.
Well, it could be that the gas generators are the backup, and that because of the zombie apocalypse,
they're using more and more juice.
And they don't have the hookup anymore to hydro because
they make a point of killing the power at the end of the first episode. Like, you know, they give you the moment of they're barricading this motel and they're gonna be fine, and then the power dies and it's like, shit. Tune in next month. And they're running generators for a basic cow fence, and they've found a way to increase the amplitude to actually stop a human being.
Voltage.
Isn't it amperage that kills you?
Well,
science teacher.
Actually, yeah. It is the current.
Yeah,
current.
I think it would have to be, because at that point, doesn't it just stop your body?
Stops your heart.
Yeah.
Well, in this case, it just
fries you.
It just cooks these guys.
It cooks them.
But
and so you're like, that doesn't totally make sense, and that's just my nitpick of it. And there's part of me that's like, you know, you've got trees. You could have used this gas to run a circular saw to make an actual fence that's better. Because there's a point where you have to go clear the dead guys off the fence, and it's the regular chore cycle for them. And I'm like, this does not strike me as horribly efficient.
Well, I mean, we missed one little thing starting that. It's the fact that the beginning of episode two, everyone's starving.
Yeah.
And pretty much you only have enough food to
give and you
to
get
a certain
Ben.
Number of people.
Remember Ben? Remember how cool he was in episode one? They kind of jam him in real fast.
It's like, here's Ben. You have to babysit him. And by that, I mean Clementine does all the babysitting for Ben.
Oh, not Ben. The other Air Force guy who just was like, remember this guy?
Oh, yeah. Him.
Oh, yeah. But, yeah, you get Ben as well, because you meet him running from a pack of zombies.
With his friend and teacher.
You have to you cut the teacher's leg off, right? Yeah. Is that the whole thing? Because he gets caught in a bear trap?
You have to cut him out of a bear trap, yeah.
So, you know, he ain't going to survive. Ben's friend gets bitten.
Yeah.
And Ben's the only survivor, and of course, he's now crazy traumatized.
But we do learn something important, in that if you die, even without being bit, you come back as a walker. Because now it's episode 2, so we can't call them zombies.
So we can't use the word zombie anymore.
Hey, I just used zombie. I'm sorry.
It's okay.
So
we are not in a zombie movie, so we're allowed to say zombie.
You would, if we were, you'd get the extra chore cycle of taking the walkers off the fence.
Damn it. In any case, I mean, the episode itself is called Starve for Help. So, you know, you're in your motel, and Lily gives you the task of giving out the food, and pretty much... you give food out to people, but whoever you pick, they'll remember it. And everyone who you don't pick, they're pissy with you. And I don't know about you guys, but I totally didn't give Lee food just because I was trying to be kind to the children. So I think only 3 pieces of food. And I think I went Duck, Clem, and I think I went with Katya just because she's the mommy. But I don't know about you guys.
I think I gave food to Carly because I was like, ooh, maybe there's potential sexy times.
Yeah, because you really want that.
Zombie apocalypse sexy times.
They do a good job of wearing the characters down, but it's been like a month. No one has any beards. It weirds me out a little.
You know what's awesome? If you don't give food to Larry, Lily actually does come up to you and she bitches you out.
Yeah.
My dad has a condition and you should be giving him food. And all I said to her was, guess what? He's a dick.
And then, no, I would honestly have busted out the apple and just like...
Actually, I did. I gave it to Larry, Duck, and Clem.
Oh, you were a nice person to Larry.
I was just like, you know what? You're an old guy. I might need you later on to distract
except for
some
the part
walkers.
Where this is the episode he dies. So.
Well, you don't know that going in, but but you're fairly certain I could outrun him.
Well, yeah, you don't have to run faster than the walkers. You only have to run faster than the slowest person in the group.
This is true. So yeah, when the farmers come, they're all like, hey, we'll trade you gasoline for, you know, food and...
meat. We have lots of meat.
Lots of meat. Except that, spoiler, and it's so obvious.
Well, like, they play it so obvious. Like, it's like, you get to the farm and everyone's talking about how it's perfect. And I'm like, this is a dairy. Where are they getting meat? Why do they have a forbidden barn of secrets?
That, of course, Kenny's like, oh my god, we need to open the door.
Well, that's because Kenny is...
he's a 12-year-old child trapped with a mullet.
Yeah. That's because Kenny, he's kind of 14. He's kind of 14.
Oh yeah, remember that guy in episode 1 from the Navy base? And how he just suddenly disappears at the farm and you're like, where'd he go?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah,
Like, again.
You hear him screaming.
The thing I love about my monster movies, but the good ones, is that... if you ever have a chance to do it in serial, have an episode where humans are the real problem. Because this one really does it. It does it really obvious, and you're just, like, clicking through all the conversations and doing the puzzles they give you to finally get to the payoff of, yes, they're eating people.
And you have to stop Clementine before she eats people. Because she's just looking at it as, yummy food! Lee, you trust these people, therefore I should trust people. And Mila, you're like, don't eat the food! Please don't eat the food! But I meant to mention something just to scale back to episode 1 for a second. We didn't talk about the big decision about Duck and that young guy, and that old man's son, Sean. I picked Duck, obviously, because I don't want to be a child killer. Does Duck actually die there?
No.
So I could.
Because otherwise, like.
It's a fixed point.
It's another magician's choice. Partly so they could maintain the bit with Duck in episode 3, and partly because Sean and that farm are part of the plot of the comics, and.
Ah!
They're keeping zombie Sean in the barn.
Okay, see,
till they fix it.
I was gonna say, because I didn't.
Yeah.
Obviously get any of that stuff, because like I said, magician's choice, I went, I am not going to be a child murderer.
Well, again, it does a good job of not showing, like, letting you really believe that there's both ways could happen every time, because sometimes it does go both
ways. It can go both ways.
It can go both ways.
I was just curious, because, like, you know, when we look at the Doug and Carly thing, that's a both ways decision where it's actually going to affect who you're going to have.
Well, even then, it's like, that choice is a big deal for how you interact with Kenny for the next 3 episodes.
Yeah.
So it's not that it changes the plot, but it changes thing. Like, it changes the experience. It doesn't change the epic, but it changes the lyric. And I think that's almost more important in game design, because doing a flowchart that wide is just impossible to manage. Whereas having the little lyric moments that keep coming back to center is easy to do and gives you a lot of opportunity to tell different stories, or the same story different ways.
I was just curious because I didn't do that, and I honestly didn't look up how the differences would go, mostly because I wanted my experience to be my experience.
And that's a good way to play it, as long as your save file doesn't get borked.
But going back to episode 2, I'm just going to throw it out there, the mother, she was eerie.
Well, yeah.
Just the way that she just so friendly, so like, oh, you boys are so sweet. You're helping an old lady out, helping my boys out. And then she doesn't think anything of eating the people. Like, she just thinks that...
Well, she's a movie cannibal, and movie cannibals come in two flavors. Sympathetic, desperate and sympathetic, or balls out creepy.
And she's both. I think she does both, truthfully.
No, I don't get the desperate sympathy thing. Like, this is not Sam Jackson giving the speech about how he was stuck on that mountain for 12 days.
See, no, I see the sympathy part, though, not so much the desperate part. She does try to be, okay, not so much sympathetic, maybe empathetic to the situation.
Like, here's the thing, though. You have to keep the person alive while you're cutting the leg off, cutting their bits off for meat, or else zombie virus takes over and it goes bad. Like, so they're performing unanesthetized surgery on strangers.
Well, in this episode, Mark.
Yeah, Mark, that's army base guy who we remember from the first episode,
totally.
Right?
But yeah. Actually, that seems just horrific though, going up the stairs and all you can hear is just these little wails, these little yelps. And then when you actually find him, you're just kinda like, okay, yeah, this is going where I thought it was going. And I just remember being really squicked out by this episode, just because, yes, I knew they were eating humans, but it was kind of one of those things where you wanted to see how they were going to go about doing it to get you to that moment. And just the way that Kenny basically, like, fanboys about the barn door, like, oh, God, there's people in there, I bet there's something in there. It's like, you kind of want to go with Kenny, because it's like, mystic door that's not allowed to be opened? I want to open it! Like Kid in a Candy Store.
Well, Kenny is very much on the side of the players in that. It's like, it's a door. I want to open the door, because there's things behind the door, and I have to pick them up and put them all in my pants, because it's still an adventure game.
Yeah.
And then you get locked in a meat freezer, and you drop a block of salt on Larry. Good riddance.
Well, basically, you look at Larry, and it's like, do I kill Larry? Or do I try to pretend I can help him?
Well, and it doesn't matter, because Kenny is dropping that brick.
Because Kenny,
he knows what's what.
Kenny's a man with a plan. He's going to get his boat.
It's not just that.
And if dropping some salt on an old asshole is what it takes, then damn it, I'm dropping the salt.
Well, I mean, let's face it. Even if you could save Larry, how many people would actually want to, considering his character?
I tried to save him. Because I was playing Lee as, you know, that human life is something that you should try to save. Even if it's douchebag guy who punched you in episode 1 and left you in the pharmacy to get eaten.
See? And that's where I tried my best to be as human as I possibly could with Lee. But the moments with Larry, like I said, it flared up my emotions. I was getting so mad half the time with him, because every time he opened his mouth, he was either being a bigot or a dick. And it was kind of like, you know what? If your life was actually precious, you wouldn't be treating me like shit. Because you'd be looking at it from the same point of view. At least you'd hope.
You've got 8 people. Be mean, be nice to more than one of them.
Well, the only person he was nice to was his daughter.
Yeah, exactly.
He wasn't even nice to Clementine. He yells at you to be nice to Clementine. And he's not even nice to Clementine. And he hates that duck kid. I mean,
well, no one likes Duck.
I liked Duck when he was playing, like,
Sidekick.
Robin and Sidekick. That was funny.
That was a fun moment, and that's there for a very specific feels-tugging reason. But come on, his parents name him Duck like the quacking noise, because that's all he does.
He doesn't shut up, that child. What? And I love how Clementine's like, he's kind of annoying. And, like, she tells you the truth. Like, she doesn't sugarcoat it. She tries to be as nice to Duck as she possibly can. She just also is hurting a lot because she sees the fact that he has a family and she doesn't. And it bothers her, and you can just see how much it bothers her because Duck doesn't even think how important his parents truly are. Which is kind of, I mean, he's very idealistic in that sense, but that's where you have Clem being so much more of a realist. He doesn't look at his parents as precious, he just sees them as His parents.
So that's my parents. My dad has a mullet.
And my mom is a veterinarian.
And we're going to get on a boat, and it's going to be great.
Whereas you look at Clem, and she's envious of him. Because she doesn't know where her parents are. She just knows that they are somewhere. They're in Savannah, but she can't... That's as far as she knows. Lee ends up becoming a surrogate parent throughout all the episodes. Despite the fact that he's never had a kid before. And he doesn't even realize how much of a big responsibility she is.
Oh, I think he realizes.
No, he clues in fast.
Yeah.
In that first episode, I kind of would say not so much right away.
Well, he's also got, zombie apocalypse.
I know, and little girl.
Little girl, and then, oh my gosh, these people dragged my parents dead out of the back room in the pharmacy, just kind of chucked them back in the alleyway. And,
yeah, that
kind of
made enough.
I gotta go kill my brother. So...
Yeah, at that moment,
he's got issues. Little girl... Keeping a little girl safe is just like, I can probably manage that at least.
Yeah.
Well, somebody's gotta keep her sane, right?
So then we get to episode 3, where...
There's a train!
Well, first, we're like, hey, so things are going weird, and you have to play detective.
Well, wait. The end of episode 2, was that with the car?
Yeah, there's
the bit with
the car.
Where you can steal the stuff in the car, because that's kind of a big deal.
Yeah, that's one of those decisions.
It's one of those decisions that will bite you in the ass later.
No, it doesn't.
No?
It will bite you no matter what you do.
Oh, that's
I was gonna
true.
Say, because I didn't steal from the car, so...
Like, no matter what you do, it bites you.
Okay, because I didn't steal from the car, so again, I'm the one who played this, again, didn't look up how the other way would be. I just didn't steal from the car because I was like...
Yeah, you find an abandoned car, and then Kenny's like,
"We're raiding it.
Screw you, we're taking all the stuff." And I'm like, okay, game. This will... And it's such a non-thing at the time, but it's like, no, the episode's over when you leave the last brother, so you can't help but think, they wrote an extra half hour a game... for this car.
Which, by the way, did you guys murder the brothers? Or did you let someone eat one of the brothers?
Oh, I left the older one screaming in the middle of the field, because it's like, yeah, no, that's just a good moment.
I popped the two of them. Because I was just like, you guys tried to make me eat meat. Human meat. You know what? That's grody. I don't know, what did you do?
I left them. I was kind of like, why don't you have some of your own medicine? Be zombie bait. I'm sorry, walker bait.
Yeah.
Walker bait.
So episode 3.
So things are going weird with the medicines, and you play detective, and there's a great little moment with Duck where it's like...
I'm Batman.
He thinks you're Batman.
And then he's Robin.
And you let him be Robin, and he helps you solve the puzzles, and then you can high-five him, and there's a great little text prompt of Duck thinks you're so cool.
Yep. Meanwhile, you don't even have to high-five. Do you have to high-five Duck?
No, you can walk right past it.
That's what I did. I don't remember high-fiving Duck.
Like, he's there. You can just leave him hanging, hand up, for a good 5 minutes before the plot kicks in.
I don't remember high-fiving Duck.
Oh, I high-fived him, and then later I had so many feels. I was like, oh,
yeah, see, I felt
so
bad.
Glad I high-fived that poor little child.
See, and I feel like an asshole. <'cause I did.
laughs> Yeah, so, you know, bandits are like, yeah, we've been... One of you has been trading drugs with us, and then the drugs stopped. So we're going to murder you all. And there's just a lot of bandits, and they come out of nowhere, and then you escape. But Doug gets bit by zombies because the shooting attracts the zombies.
Well, that's if you have Doug, whereas if you have Carly, Carly's just badass
no,
the whole time.
No, it still happens.
It still happens.
It's still just as hard, too.
And Duck gets
bit,
too.
Well, no, see, I get confused because you said Doug. So I didn't...
Duck, sorry.
Okay, I was going to say... Like, Doug? Carly's badass. I haven't picked Duck. Okay, Duck.
Duck, sorry.
Don't confuse me.
This game gets dangerously close to the 2-Steve rule.
But, okay, yeah. No, that makes more sense, because I'm like, I'm confused.
And then, you know, Lily finally melts down, and, you know, your choice from earlier gets negated, from episode 1 gets negated in a big, gunshotty way.
Yeah.
And then your choice about what to do with Lily doesn't really matter, because no matter what she do, she's escaping.
I know, and I would have shot Lily in that moment if I
like,
could.
Honestly, it's like, you can keep her or you can exile her, and I'm like, nah, I'll waste the bullet on her.
Yeah.
Oh, I kept her around.
And then she's...
She stole
your RV.
But that's okay, because I got a train! It was shiny!
And see, this is where my problem comes, is like, okay, you have this point where, okay, you've got Duck who's getting worse very fast... And you get on the train, and you spend a little adventure gamey time getting the train working, and you meet a kindly hobo.
Chuck.
And then you stop the train and you have to deal with a zombie kid in a absolutely beautifully framed shot. Like, this game has an excellent sense of cinematography.
I can agree with that.
Like, someone on that team is a good photographer.
I had all the feels for Doc, I'm
and
not
you,
gonna lie.
Well, like, first Katja and then Doc, and I'm like, wow.
Well, it's the fact that she kills herself.
Well, she does that rather than take out her own kid.
She can't. She says to Lee, she goes, "Let me do it." And you know that it's not going to end well because mother feels for their son and she kills herself. And it's a beautifully framed shot of her holding, you know, dead duck. Well, no, not dead duck. Just sick duck with a giant bullet in her head. And it's just, I bawled like a baby.
And
so I think when the next choice came.
And then it's like, and then you help Kenny deal with his kid. And then the game, and you have this wonderful, like, you have all these feels. And then the game keeps going for 2 more hours.
Well, yes, because you have to meet Krista and Omid.
And I'm like, this is really awkward. This is a terrible transition. Like, even, the next beat is not even that. Like, there's a beat where it's like, Kindly Hubba's like, you know, that little girl's gonna have to grow up fast, and you're kind of coddling her.
You need to teach her the ways.
You gotta help her out. It would be cool if you were stuck, you know, resolving that about teaching her how to fire and, you know, tidying up her hair. Even though, really, you should be tidying up Kenny's mullet, too. It's dangerous.
I actually love the scene, though, where he's cutting her hair. Because, you know, he has to try to convince her. She's like, but I like my hair. And he's like, no, if they grab you, it's going to be ugly. So, you know, we need to cut your hair. And she makes a big fuss about it, but she eventually just sort of succumbs to what he's explaining to her. Because it starts to get more and more real, especially when she realizes that, you know, Duck wasn't coming back and Katja was gone.
Like, there are 2 really good half episodes in 3 that I kind of wish had found a way to split up better across the whole thing. Because then after you deal with, you gear up a little Clemmy, it's like, oh, hey, there's a couple puzzles. And some new characters. Hey, these people, they're going to be funny for a few minutes. And you're going to be like, laugh and have some fun, and then it's like, you know, I just shot a kid.
Well, I was gonna say, did any of you actually let Kenny kill Duck?
Apparently that's the better way to go, but I'm like, I can't let him do it.
I couldn't let him do it. There was a part of me that just kind of said, like, why should he have to?
I don't remember.
I think, honestly, if I had let Kenny do it, I think he would have been more screwed up.
No, apparently that's actually the path to getting him through it, is you let him do his kid, and then you do the kid in episode 4, and then
I think that's what I did.
Then you hug it out.
Yeah.
Okay, because Kenny, in that one episode, he didn't want to come back to me right away.
Yeah.
I had everybody except Kenny in that last little bit, because at the end of episode 4, it shows you, so who's your bro right now? And, like, I knew so many people who did it, and they only got Ben, for an example. Only got Kenny.
Yeah, and like I like Omid and Krista. I really do. I think.
Especially when you figure out Krista's little secret.
Well, just their interactions and how they react to you is interesting, and it's fun to have an outsider's perspective on these characters again.
Well, especially because Omid is just so...
Just because Chuck seems to be so nonplussed about what's going on. It's like, you know, deal with the kid, but it's like... Oh, teenager, crazy mullet guy, yeah, whatever. I'll roll with you. You got my train.
Well, yeah, it's like Chuck joins the group and trusts them so easily, and at least...
Like, he doesn't question anything except for Clementine.
Yeah, whereas Krista and Omid, it's a bit more realistic. It's like, okay, zombie apocalypse, I'm not just gonna join up with the next group that comes around. Like, I'm gonna...
Well, and even Krista says, she goes, you know, at first, like, we don't work with people. Because her biggest fear, obviously, is... the possibility of either being betrayed or having to coddle other people.
Well, and then you get to this whole train bit, and it just, it's like, okay, you figure out how to clear out the gas tanker, and you find...
And you get into trouble if you lift Krista into the train first, which is kind of interesting. She actually scolds the shit out of you. Meanwhile, my logic is ladies first. I'm just saying.
Well, I was like, Omid's injured, so... Walker bait. So I'm gonna go for the healthy person first in case they end up killing
the
other
worst
one.
Part is, if you pick Omid first, he then scolds you for not picking a lady.
Either way, someone's gonna be mad at you, and I'm like, I was actually like, I shoved him off the bridge, so he was already mad at me. It's like, you weren't gonna jump, but you shoved me. Yeah, and now you're alive. Go team me. You're welcome.
Oh, Omid and Lee have some really wonderful interactions, though, just because of their love of history. Like, the two of them just fanboy history.
Well, I love how they're like, so we were just on a road trip to Civil War battlegrounds, and who likes that except old white guys?
And then Lee's like, Meanwhile, there's Crystal like, oh, it's just so exciting, the amount of sarcasm in your voice. It's funny because I remember when I got to Omid and Krista, I didn't like Krista at first just because she comes across so cold. She's got a good reason for it when you finally figure out why she behaves the way that she does.
But it's...
You kind of look at her and you go, Omid is just like, everyone's my friend! And Krista's like, no one's our friend.
Well, Krista would be the cat and Omid
the dog.
Is the dog.
He's the wiggle bum puppy. So I adore Omid. I'm just throwing it out there.
And then it finally ends on the bum-bum-bum of the walkie-talkie that has been Clementine's comfort prop for the past
with a voice on it.
Two episodes actually does work, and she has been talking to someone for real.
Which pisses Lee off.
Well, it's like, well, fuck.
But they end up in Savannah, so...
So they get to Savannah, and...
They're gonna get their boat.
They're gonna get the boat. Which goes so well for them.
Oh, God.
Okay, so here's where my nitpicky voice comes in. Because it's like, okay, you have a colony of people in Savannah. They've barricaded off a chunk of... Basically a school and... basically, like, a school, the park near the school, and a couple of industrial buildings that seemed kind of valuable to them. And it seems like a good plan. And they're like... And then they decide to be Darwinist assholes and only let strong people in. Like, no kids, no
pregnant. No old people.
No people, no...
No cancer patients.
Well, yeah.
They actually outright state the cancer patient part, which I thought was kind of interesting.
Well, like, no pre-existing... Anyone with any pre-existing conditions. Like, they're a really bad insurance company.
Yep.
And then you find out the backstory is, like, of this new girl you pick up is like, oh, I had a sister and we were living here and I was banging the doctor for insulin. And I'm like, why do they even have insulin? Insulin goes bad. Like, fast. Like, you get 6 weeks on a bag. And it's been 4 months since Z-Day. And I'm like, so why do they even have it?
Maybe to get high. Get sick on it. I don't know.
You can't get high. You can't do anything with insulin.
Just a magic hand wave.
I know, you just kind of forgive it.
Like, okay, you can't do
it. Someone dropped the ball on the writing team for that one.
Like, that was a ball dropped. And even their even if you look at their plan, it's like, this doesn't work long term. Eventually you're going to want to procreate to have a successful colony here.
And let's face it, the whole boat thing is equally just as problematic. Well, because Kenny outright says, so not everybody can get on the boat.
Well, Kenny's plan was for him and his family.
And maybe two other people. Which, if you're a nice person, it would be you and Clem.
And it's like, he's a fisherman. He presumes that he will be able to fish his way to keep living until sometime when something gets it fixed.
God bless you, Kenny.
Or he finds an island to clear out and lives like Robinson Crusoe. I don't know. Kenny's plan... doesn't make a lot of sense, but at least it's something to go for.
Like, it's something that gives them strength to move on, even though you see how illogical it is.
Well, something he knows. He's a fisherman. Yeah. So being in a boat, that makes sense to him. It's safe. And then
after he loses his kid and his wife, all he has is the boat plan.
Yeah.
Like, that's the only thing keeping him remotely sane. So you just kind of let him roll with it.
And it's not just that. You also spend a lot of it trying to protect him from killing Ben.
Well,
because Ben betrayed everybody.
For reasons that keep changing every time he talks about it, so I'm not sure how reasonable he was.
I mean, let's throw it out there. Ben's a stupid teenager.
Ben's a tool.
That's all there is to it. But Ben is essentially what gets Duck and Katya killed. He really is partially at fault for all of that.
It's his fault. I blame him entirely. Especially because he keeps changing his reason.
But episode 4 is also where you get to see Clementine babysit Ben, which is kind
of funny. Well, yeah, that becomes the running joke of, Clem, I need you to stay here where it's safe with Ben. But, so you're going to let Ben babysit me? No, you're babysitting Ben. She's like, oh, yeah, that makes more sense.
She just laughs about it. But, oh, when you get to the house in episode 4, you go through this house, you're trying to find food, shelter, whatever, and there's this kid up in the attic and his trusty dog. You see a picture of them. And I remember bawling.
Oh, that house just is a great job of, like, hey, you need to get in through the dog door. There's a dog grave, and it just puts all the pieces in front of you, and then just lets you go, because then you get inside and you see the family photo with the dog and the kid.
And then you see the hand-drawn picture, and so then you're like, oh my gosh, there's going to be something in this house, and you clear it, you go through it, and you're like, oh, there's nothing. Oh,
then you get up to the attic.
And then you get up to the attic, and you're like, well, shit.
There's a zombie kid.
I'm not going to lie, I cried more over the dog than kid, only because it's just the way they frame the shot of seeing Lee digging up the grave. And you see this little dog, and he's just there, and you just kind of see Lee like, oh, do I really have to touch this dead dog?
So he grabs it by the collar, and then the bones fall apart around it, and it's like, somehow that's worse.
Yep. And as a dog lover, that just kind of made my heart sink a little bit.
I think what really got me was just when you get up into the attic and it's just Kenny watching the little starved zombie
child.
Like the zombie kid doesn't have enough energy to move, but you kind of got to solve that problem.
And then there's also Kenny thinking, crap, he looks like my son. And he looked no more like than the age of my son. And he even outright says to you, like, I can't do this again. I like I said, I shot Duck. I shot the kid. I didn't let Kenny dirty his hands at all in any of these situations. Nor do I regret doing that, only because of the fact that I didn't really want Kenny to get more screwed up.
Yeah. And then, you know, you run around and try and find a battery that you just carry around. Like, you find a car battery.
Oh, and she puts it in the magic backpack.
Like, she this tiny little woman puts it in a magic backpack. And anyone here who has lifted a car battery knows it's like, no, that didn't happen.
She's got Hermione's bag.
No, well, it's like, Lee has magic pants. We accept this because he's an adventure game character. So when Lee has an 18-pound battery, you just kind of roll with it. Because he's still got
his wrench?
He's still got his super wrench from the train to bash things in, and a couple other things you've picked up.
Yep.
And you just kind of roll with it. And then she takes it. It's like, no. No.
Well, especially when she starts doing her ninja moves up and down the buildings.
Yeah,
I kind of had a hard time with that. Like, episode 4 writing-wise, I think, is the weakest just because, well, it has really beautiful moments like the house. It also has moments like that.
And it also has the annoying sewer puzzle.
Oh, I hated that puzzle.
And the death of Chuck, which
I was very sad about the death of Chuck because of the way that they strung him up.
Well, I like that Chuck is like, he hears the bells, he puts it together, and it's like, well, ask not for whom the bell tolls. Yep. Like, he is a literate hobo.
Yeah. But just the way you see him strung up in the sewer, I mean, it's a pretty awful sight.
Yeah. And then you do the sewer puzzle, and you move around, and then you meet the cancer patients, who are like, okay, you're regular folks. Two of you seem sane.
Yep. You two talk.
Okay. Two of you people seem very sane, and I would not mind hanging out with you to have some adventures. And then, oh, wait, no, the end, it's like they're assholes.
Well, you know, and it's kind of like, well, if this was the feed zombie apocalypse, y'all be cured.
Yeah.
So that there's part of me that was like, meh. It was, yeah, they're hiding out in a bunker, and you're just like, yeah. Well, but the one character was created because a woman won a contest.
Well, I think they had a character in mind for that. And yeah. They had a character in mind to go with the doctor guy. And they just slapped her appearance on him. Had a 14-year-old kid won it, it would have been a 14-year-old kid who would have gotten eaten by zombies.
Yeah.
By the bell tower. And then you learn a little bit more about creepy radio guy. And then Ninja Zombie comes out and bites Lee. Because, you know, hey, second to last episode, let's really ramp this up.
Yeah.
And it's not that you get Ninja Zombied. It's a little unfair, but I'll buy it because, hey, it's a fun narrative contrivance for tension. But what's really awesome is you're sitting there bit, and then all your friends hear you scream about, ah, zombied! and then you scream, you scream after you get bit, and then you can actually choose whether or not you show them. And I'm like, hey guys. Like, I couldn't lie to them. I just couldn't. It's like, guys, we're on a time limit now.
Yeah, and then did you let them cut off your arm?
I did in the moment, because at the start of the next episode, you cuss out Radio Guy. Like, you end the episode cussing out Radio Guy as more zombies have followed you into town. And you wake, and at the start of episode 5, you have, you know, you pass out, and then you wake up, and there's Kenny with a surgical saw. And not the good kind.
It's like, do not want, do not
this
want.
Is, and you're just sitting there, and it's like, Kenny, what are you doing?
Do not want.
And it's like, I did in the moment, because for some reason I thought that would help, and I'm like, wait, no, Telltale Game, it's not gonna matter.
I decided, I was like, I'm gonna keep that arm, I'm probably gonna need it, and I got to do some badass stuff later on.
Well, actually, here's a fun game. If you're playing episode 5, or replaying it for some reason, count how many animations there are that are one-handed.
Yeah.
Like, keep your arm, but count the one-handed animations. Yeah.
But yeah, it was pretty sweet to have both hands, and one part of the episode, you're like, you're cursing out walkie-talkie guy who they call the stranger, because you got to get through this herd of walkers to try to rescue Clem. And because I kept my other hand, I got a badass piece of glass and a weapon. So I'm like two-handed, just like Lee's like, fuck it, man. I've been bitten. I'm going to die anyways. I got to save Clem. Well, I'm just going through this herd of walkers and I'm taking out every single one.
And that scene's really awesome, because at that point you've like lost at least two people, and you've been split up from Omid and Krista. So it's just you know you're gone. Like, Lee looks bad. And it doesn't, for the record, if you're playing episode 4, did you save Ben? You didn't save Ben. But you get to, and you're stuck on the street with, at the end of it, you're stuck on the street, and there's a horde, and you've got your meat cleaver, and maybe if you've got another hand, you got something else.
Piece of glass.
And you are killing contest winners. Because everyone who got second place in that contest got to be a one-note zombie that gets axed in the head by Lee.
I did not have an arm.
Yeah. I think,
cut my arm off.
I think the game does a cool thing where at the end of the episode it shows you who
did what.
How many people did what on whatever network you're playing on. And that's interesting to see, because most people seem to chop off the arm. Like, that would help.
Well, it's really funny, because back in the first episode, when you see it, like, most people do not save Doug. They go for Carly. And it's just like,
oh, yeah, the percentages is just ridiculous on that one.
And so, I mean, Telltale did go through on later episodes and try to
make things a little more...
Less obvious. But...
like, I don't think they established that Doug had survival skills as well. Like, Doug is a very smart tech guy. If you keep him around, he's really handy.
Yeah.
Yeah, I didn't do that. You know why? Because Carly was hot, and I thought I was going to get some. See, I was with Chrissy. I totally thought we were going to get some.
You do get a very nice, sweet little scene before Carly gets shot.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But...
and then Lily shoots her, and then you just want to shoot Lily right afterwards.
Then you get to the scene where you confront the stranger about... and he's been with Clem, and he's... And you just sit down across from each other, and he's crazy, and you're not in a good place either, and the character of the stranger calls you out on your choices that you've made since episode 2.
Especially the car. Well, the car was his!
It doesn't matter which way you go, he calls you out on it.
Yeah.
And you can sit there and justify yourself, you can get pissed, you can do whatever. And here's the thing, this is what I love about this encounter. Usually, when a game starts calling you on your choices, it moralizes at you. They three-dog you. But here, it's like, it's very clear, this is this character who just needs a reason to hate you. And it lets you react to him however you want. And then Clem sneaks out, and you like, eye blink her at the vase, and then boom!
Clem, best partner ever.
And then the ending becomes about you and Clem... just making your way out. And I nitpick a lot of things about this game. I didn't go into a whole list, and maybe I will one day. But you get to the last few sections with Clem, and it doesn't matter. Like, whatever choices you made it or didn't make, or whether the game designers allowed you to make choices, it doesn't matter. Because this game is about parenthood in a very real way, and it tackles that theme so well. And this just hammers it home. Like, there's a little interface thing where every time you make a choice, it'll say, such and such will remember that. And at the end of this, and at the end of the your little section getting Clem safe, out safe, you can finally say a few last words to her, and all it says is Clementine will remember that. And it doesn't matter, because the series is over, and I don't think they're probably going to do their best to wipe the slate clean with Season 2. Because they got the deal for Season 2 and kind of backed away from doing multiple endings for the game. But, and it's like, this doesn't mean anything to the game, but it means something to me playing it, and it means something to the characters.
I freaking cried. And I cried that whole
so
scene.
Many feels.
Mostly because, for me personally, I think the reason that scene tore me up a little bit is because you've got Lee strapped to the radiator, and like I said, Miley was missing an arm, so he was equally useless. And just the instructions he's giving Clem, they're two ways. They're not just go do this. He's also instilling the survival skills into her. He's instilling the I love you, I'm trying to say this to you in the only way that I know how. Because he wants her to believe that she is a real survivor. And it's beautifully done. You can see the tears in Lee's eyes as he's just kind of reciting a lot of different things to her.
And the facial animations throughout the series have been great.
Mm-hmm. Oh, God.
Like, and it does so with really simple models. It's just so good. Like, they paid attention to how these characters react.
It's just watching the two of them cry together that it makes you want to cry. Because Clem is constantly like, don't give up, Lee, don't give up, Lee. Like, we can get out together in, like a way that a child would. And Lee's trying to tell her, it's not going to happen.
Like, go.
Yeah.
And like I said, if you had Omid and Krista, I told her to go find Omid and Krista.
Well,
at the end of...
Not that it really matters.
Cause... Well, you get a different silhouette, though, do you not?
No, the end cutscene after the credits...
Is the silhouette of them?
No, it's the same. It is two silhouettes.
But you don't know who it is.
But it could be anyone.
Okay. I interpret it as, like, that was... Because, like I said, nothing happened to Omid and Krista for my game, so...
I let the timer run out on my decision. When you have to decide if you're going to tell Clem to end you, or if you're just tell her to leave you. I was like, you know what? I've made all the decisions up to this point. I'm going to leave it to the game to decide for me, based on all the decisions that I made.
Or leave it to Clem's scripting to decide for you. And I'm like, I just told her not to waste the bullet.
Well, yeah, I told her not to waste the bullet, too. She ended up not wasting the bullet. She left Lee there.
Yeah. All the feels happened there. I can't see
that. And again, like, there's one of those things that, you know, the whole games is art comments come up, and I'm like, well, one of the questions that comes up when you're talking about games as art is, has a video game ever made you cry? And I'm like, yeah, right here, and another time in Mass Effect 3.
I've cried a few times in video games, but I'm easy to make sob like a baby.
You're a big blubber butt.
I'm a big blubber butt.
Well, this one, like, for days after finishing... Episode 5, I was still thinking about it. Like, it really stayed with me, and I was like...
I think episode 5 just does an amazing job of sort of wrapping everything up. It gives you that last chance for Lee to kind of have redemption in his own way, just by the scene with the the knife and the going through all the stuff.
Well, I think you needed one real, like, zombie kill of the week, because this game hasn't really had that. Like, you've been firing frantically, you had the annoying puzzle... And there have been a couple other cases where you just kind of did it, but it was always like making you mash for it, making you mash buttons for it, making you rely on other characters to do it.
And here this didn't.
And then this was just like, no, Lee kills the zombies.
Yeah.
And it's just, it's an awesome scene. Just watching him
like
raid.
The whole last bit of episode 5 is worth the price of admission alone.
Oh, it's beautiful. Again, just in terms of comedy and cinematography, just, I love the scene where he's crying as his head's against the radiator because he knows you're not going to survive.
Well, they even did a really smart thing of mirroring how you met Clem, where, you know, there's a zombie crawling all over the place, and you have to kick her a weapon to get the job done.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. They do a good job with it. And I don't know if they can top this with Walking Dead Season 2 or anything they do ever. Like, I don't think the Fables game is going to be have this much punch.
I guess it's one of those, in the case of Fable, it's wait and see.
Like,
the property itself, I don't see it topping this.
Well, I think Fables will be fun. I've read the first trade's worth of comics, and I've got a few more sitting in a file on my computer to read.
Again, but it's like,
the source material does not have that much punch to it.
It's going to be intriguing to see what they do, considering some of the artwork they've released for Season 2.
Well, one piece of artwork, really.
It makes you kind of think, what can they do to even top that ending? Is there a way to do it, considering you spend all this time with Lee? You are Lee, essentially. And, I mean, like I said, I can't remember the last time I cried like once a month, I think, while this was still happening, just because I was a big, sucky baby the whole time. But I didn't care.
I don't know how you managed to cry over episode 4.
The dog. I told you about the dog, and I was sitting there, and I'm going, and then I saw the pictures in the house and everything, and I was like...
I don't think it was digging up the dog. It was putting the dog back in the ground with the kid that really does it.
Yeah. Well, you put them together, but and even, it's so beautiful.
But, like, as you're reburying the kid and the dog, and I'm like... The way they're shooting this, it's like they're going to do a reveal. So any emotion I had was immediately undermined by, oh, and there's the guy I was expecting to be in the silhouette. Like, I think they could have let that play a little longer before they did the dun-dun-dun moment.
Who cares? Dog. Sad.
Yes, dog sad.
Duck. Sad. Actually, wait. Oh, episode 1 did make me tear up when Lee sees his brother. Yeah, I cried every month, I'm pretty sure. But you know what? I'm somebody, for an example, who's crazy emotional, so it's easy to get a rise out of me. I mean, I don't know how many times I screamed during the game, too, just because, oh my god, no, that can't happen! But I couldn't reload my save because the deed was done. So I just accepted things for the way that they were and kind of went on with it.
Well, I remember when I played it, the first episode here, and I'm just like, oh my gosh, no, no, no! And
like, again, it's a really good infinite interface for tension. Yeah. I won't say horror, but for tension.
Oh, yes, the amount of screaming I think we both did. I mean, I was rewatching when Chrissy came over to play it, and it was just like, oh, God.
Load the shotgun!
And I was like, oh, my gosh, he's going to get me.
Well, Chrissy's there going, he's going to get me. And Sam's going, load the shotgun!
I'm just like, but he's going to get me.
And then I just love the thing. I mean, like I said, it's an emotional kind of roller coaster. And it's a roller coaster that really does, it's not just a big drop at the end, and that's your hurrah. It's the fact that it's always going up and down.
And I think that episodic structure forced them to hit at least one good note every episode.
It's like riding a really awesome roller coaster.
Had they maybe done it in one big chunk, you wouldn't have had that.
Well, I mean, I think for people who did play it in one big chunk, though, I mean, those beats were coming fast and furious. I can think of one person I know who played it in one chunk and they ended up being a mess for, like, a week afterwards.
Well, I played it in a chunk.
No, I think had they developed it in one
chunk. Oh, yeah, that would have been pretty bad.
That might have been a different game.
Oh, it would have definitely been different, but...
It does make you question, though, can Telltale top this? Because the same year we had Mass Effect 3, and that's another game that Scott just admitted that he cried during. Now, Mass Effect 3 has some pretty nasty
moments. I cried over Thane, weirdly enough.
Yeah, I figured it was going to be Morden, and you didn't cry over Morden.
Well, no, because Morden goes out like a boss, but Thane is like, oh shit, the poetry of that. Yes. No, he's praying for you. And I'm like, god damn it, Thane!
That's what I mean. I mean, Mass Effect does it in such a different way that, yes, you knew it was the conclusion to that trilogy, and yes, you knew those things were going to happen just based on how the game had set itself up, but damn it, it still hurt. Especially Thane. You knew Thane was going to die at some point, but it was just like, oh, the poetic justice of it all.
Yeah.
I'm going to go sit and cry in my corner. I cried over Thane, too. It's okay. I think last year I cried a lot during video games. But I told you, I'm a big sucky baby. I mean, I also cried during Deus Ex Human Revolution because I couldn't save Malik. And then I was like, I'm going to keep playing until I save Malik. And then I finally did. And I was like, I'm not crying anymore. Yay! Because I'm that type of person. Yeah. I get the job done.
All right. Chrissy? Can Telltale do better?
You've played Back to the Future, too. I mean, you can compare it even to that.
Well, Back to the Future.
Well, Back to the Future was kind of a big fan link.
Well, and part of Back to the Future for me was just like, at the beginning, I'm like, damn it, Marty, just take the friggin' book. Like, knock him out and take the book. But that was not a choice.
Stupid bit.
I don't know. I think they will eventually be able to top it. But I think for a while, they've moved the bar that much higher, and it's going to take time.
And like I said, they beat out last year. The only other game it could have competed with, which was Mass Effect 3. Because let's face it, AAA last year was pretty pathetic. Hey,
they had Sleeping Dogs.
Yes, and it didn't even compete, unfortunately. And Sleeping Dogs had a moment where I bawled like a freaking baby.
Sam cries over lots of games.
Lesson learned. But you know what? Sleeping Dogs is still one of the best games I've ever played in a long time.
It's the best GTA since GTA 3.
And we will have an episode on that, just so I can whine about Jackie Ma, my homeboy.
Your
butts. He's my homeboy. Let's establish this correctly. He's the love of my life, and he's a putz.
All right. Well, I think with that, I think we're going to call it an episode.
Also, before we go, please tell us in the comments what kind of choices you made during Walking Dead, because we'd love to hear it and just kind of how you felt about it. I always love hearing those types of stories.
People leave comments? What are you talking about?
Shut up.
What alternate universe are you from?
And then while you're also at it, do yourself a favor, go on GameInformer.com and look up the article about how Telltale created Clementine. It's a really beautiful piece. My friend wrote it. She might have been on the show before, Kimberly Wallace. Check that out. It's an interesting insight to how they crafted that character in the world. Definitely check that out.
And if you're playing the game for the first time and you were like, you know what, screw it, I'm going to hear all the spoilers, whatever you do, protect Clem.
Exactly, because that's the only thing that matters at the end of the day.
I thought they smelled bad on the outside.
I Thought They Smelled Bad on the Outside is released under an international attribution non-commercial share-alike Creative Commons license version 3.0. Please visit sbopodcast.blogspot.com for more episodes and contact information.